Hello, everyone, and happy Monday evening. I am here to share from I Am That, and tonight I am beginning message number three, which is titled The Living Presence. So it begins with a question from a questioner. As I can see, there is nothing wrong with my body or my real being. Both are not of my making and need not be improved upon. What has gone wrong is the inner body. Call it mind, consciousness, whatever the name. Again, that's what the questioner said. And Nisargadatta Maharaj says, what do you consider to be wrong with your mind? And the questioner says, it is restless, greedy of the pleasant, and afraid of the unpleasant. And Nisargadatta Maharaj says, what is wrong with its seeking the pleasant and shirking the unpleasant? Between the banks of pain and pleasure, the river of life flows. It is only when the mind refuses to flow with life and gets stuck at the banks that it becomes a problem. By flowing with life, I mean acceptance, letting come what comes and go what goes. Desire not, fear not. Observe the actual as and when it happens. For you are not what happens. You are to whom it happens. Ultimately, even the observer, you are not. You are the ultimate potentiality of which the all-embracing consciousness is the manifestation and expression. So it's kind of a, to me, it's a kind of an interesting paragraph because the questioner comes in with an assumption that, that something is not right. The term he uses, it's gone wrong. He says, what's gone wrong is the inner body. Call it the mind, consciousness, whatever the name. But I would say that really what he has a sense is something is not right. And when Nisargadatta asks him what it is, he talks about how his mind is restless. It's greedy for the pleasant and afraid of the unpleasant. But then Nisargadatta's very first response back to him is, what is wrong with it seeking the pleasant and shirking the unpleasant? Which almost makes it seem like he's going to tell the questioner, go ahead, seek the pleasant and avoid the unpleasant when he starts off with that question. But then that's not what he says. So he starts off by saying, what is wrong with the mind seeking the pleasant and shirking the unpleasant? But then he says, next, between the banks of pain and pleasure, the river of life flows. It is only when the mind refuses to flow with life and gets stuck at the banks that it becomes a problem. And then he explains what he means by flowing. He says, by flowing with life, I mean acceptance, letting come what comes and go what goes. And then he tells him, desire not and fear not. So desire not to me means, do not be seeking the pleasant. And fear not means do not be avoiding the unpleasant. And in fact, that makes sense with his answer because then you're just flowing. with what comes. It comes, what goes, it goes. So to me, it's a little bit curious that the very first sentence seemed to be contrary to everything else that he said, unless he was merely, and of course we aren't there, we're reading a book, we don't hear tone of voice, we don't see expressions. So maybe his very first question, because again, the questioner is the one that said something's gone wrong with the mind. And then Nisargadatta said, what do you consider to be wrong? And the questioner said, it's restless, greedy of the pleasant, and afraid of the unpleasant. So maybe Nisargadatta's first question was simply to get him to kind of look within himself, get the questioner to kind of look within himself and double check, are you sure about that? You know, because he says, what's wrong with it, seeking the pleasant and shirking the unpleasant? But then he goes right on to tell the guy not to desire, not to fear, instead to accept. So I don't know. I mean, maybe if we were been there, you know, it would have been a little more obvious why that first question seems to be different than the rest of the paragraph. But he does tell him desire not, fear not, observe the actual as and when it happens. And observe the actual, I think, in this case, means be present enough to notice what's happening without your interpretation. Right? Just take things as they are and don't add any interpretation of your own to it. So desire not, fear not, observe the actual as and when it happens. And then the next thing he says is also kind of curious, kind of interesting. He says, for you are not what happens, you are to whom it happens. Only I don't think in this case he's referring to the vulnerable personality. Because his very next sentence says, ultimately, even the observer you are not. So somehow in the way he says, you are to whom it happens, I think he really means you're the witness. Somehow in these words, you are not what happens, you are to whom it happens. He's saying, for example, if something that the mind wants to avoid happens, you aren't completely caught up in that. You're a step back. You're the observer. Even though that doesn't appear to be exactly what's here in the words, and who knows, maybe it's a slight mistranslation. You know, I really can't say. But you have to take into account the very next sentence. Again, he says, you are not what happens, you are to whom it happens. And then he says, ultimately, even the observer you are not. So he seems to be trying to tell the man that you're not, you know, that you're not the victim of circumstances. You are the one who witnesses circumstances. And then he says, actually, you're even further back than that. And this, I think, is a really important sentence. He says, you are the ultimate potentiality of which the all-embracing consciousness is the manifestation and expression. So the observer, that consciousness that is often called the observer or the witness, that's actually just a manifestation of what you are. You are even further back than that. You're the ultimate potentiality. That's what you are. You are the ultimate potentiality of which the all-embracing consciousness is the manifestation and expression. So, you know, it's really a very, very curious, curious paragraph because, you know, a couple of the sentences almost don't seem to fit with the rest of the paragraph. And again, like I said, I don't know if it's because we're missing body language and voice inflection, or if there's mistranslation here, it's just hard to say. But the majority of the paragraph, if we take the majority of it, it is pointing out that acceptance, neutrality, equanimity is the way to be. And through those practices, acceptance, neutrality, equanimity, we come to know ourselves as the observer rather than the affected personality. And then again, ultimately, we're even prior to the observer, right? So it's kind of like you could call it two awakenings. First, you awaken to the fact that you're the observer rather than the personality. And then you awaken to the fact that you're actually the source of the observer, what he calls here the ultimate potentiality. So after Nisargadatta Maharaj says all of that, the questioner comes back and says, yet, between the body and the self, there lies a cloud of thoughts and feelings, which neither serves the body nor the self. These thoughts and feelings are flimsy, transient, and meaningless, mere mental dust that blinds and chokes, yet they are there, obscuring and destroying. So the sense that I get is the questioner is really frustrated with the mind, because again, he started off by talking about the restless mind that's greedy of the pleasant and afraid of the unpleasant. And so here, once Nisargadatta has given his answers to that, the man is right back again saying, yeah, but still, you know, even if that all of everything you just said is true, I still have this mind that just has all of these thoughts. And then there's all of these feelings. And even though they're meaningless, they're obscuring the truth for me. And Nisargadatta Maharaj says, surely the memory of an event cannot pass for the event itself, nor can the anticipation. There is something exceptional, unique about the present event, which the previous or the coming do not have. There is a livingness about it, an actuality. It stands out as if illuminated. There is the stamp of reality on the actual, which the past and the future do not have. So again, the man or the woman, the person, is complaining about their thoughts. The person, again, it doesn't say something specifically about the past or the future, just about thoughts. But Nisargadatta, of course, knows that these thoughts that pass through the mind, they're never in the now. They're either focused on the past or they're focused on the future. So even though the questioner doesn't say anything about the past or the future, that's what Nisargadatta comments on. And what he wants to help the questioner to see, because again, the questioner is complaining about his mind as if his mind is some kind of a real problem. And what Nisargadatta wants to help him to see is the difference between reality and the mind. Because he's really kind of saying the mind is a real problem. So if he can see the difference between reality and the mind, then the value that he has given to the mind's chatter maybe will become less, and he won't see it as a real problem. It may still be there, but he'll be able to overlook it. So what Nisargadatta wants him to notice is the unreality of the mind. And the way he wants him to notice the unreality of the mind is by contrasting it with reality. Reality being this moment. Ultimately, consciousness. We'll just start with this moment as a simple first step. So Nisargadatta says, you know, again, your thoughts are made up of the past and the future. For instance, today in my life, I went to La Vida, Colorado with Lisa Hester today. It was a marvelous day. A marvelous, marvelous day. But I'm not there right now. I'm here right now. And when I think back on that wonderful day with Lisa in La Vida, that memory does not have for me now the same sense of reality that this moment sitting here looking at a Pal Talk screen and talking to you has. This moment has more, as Nisargadatta says, livingness in it. It has more reality in it. The day that happened today, the livingness is not in it. It's a memory without life. And you can see this yourself if you remember your day. Earlier today, you were also somewhere else besides sitting here in Pal Talk listening voice. So look at your memory. Notice the quality of the memory. And then look at this moment right now. And notice the quality of this moment right now. And this moment has a sense of reality to it, or again, as Nisargadatta says, a sense of livingness in it that the memory no longer has. Now, certainly when I was in La Vida today, that felt very real. And I can remember that felt very real. But if I look at my present moment experience, my current present moment memory of La Vida today does not have the reality, the livingness in it that this moment has. And I can imagine tomorrow morning, I'll be teaching an Inner Ramana class. Barbara's here, she'll be in my class, right? I can imagine that tomorrow I'm going to be sitting over there at my desk. Right now I'm on my sofa. I'll be sitting over there at my desk teaching Inner Ramana. I can imagine that because I, you know, just did it last Tuesday. But that imagination of the future tomorrow also does not have that same concrete reality that this moment has. And the reason this moment has a sense of reality is because I am here. I am not in the past. I have a memory of the past. But I am not in the past. I am not in the future. I can imagine the future, but I am not in the future. I am here. And I'm not referring to this body of Regina. I, consciousness or presence, I am reality. I am livingness. And because I am here now, this moment appears real or appears to have livingness in it or a sense of reality to it where the past and the future don't. And again, that's totally because I'm here. And I'm always here now, right? Events come and go, but I am always present. And so the current moment always has that sense of reality. But the mind is made up of the chatter about the past and the chatter about the future, which means where the mind is in unreality. And if I contrast the reality of this moment with the unreality of the sense of past and the sense of future, I can see that the mind's chatter just doesn't have any real weight to it. There's no livingness there. And then I can begin to not take the mind's chatter as seriously, and I can focus my attention with now, with what has a stronger sense of reality. So again, Nisargadatta's answer says, surely the memory of an event cannot pass for the event itself. Nor can the anticipation. There is something exceptional, unique about the present event, which the previous or the coming do not have. There is a livingness about it, an actuality. It stands out as if illuminated. There is the stamp of reality on the actual meaning right now. There is a stamp of reality on the actual, which the past and future do not have. And then the questioner asks, what gives the present that stamp of reality? And Nisargadatta says, there is nothing peculiar in the present event to make it different from the past and the future. For a moment, the past was actual, and the future will become so. What makes the present so different? Obviously, my presence. I am real, for I am always now, in the present. And what is with me shares my reality. The past is in memory. The future is in imagination. There is nothing in the present event itself that makes it stand out as real. It may be some simple periodical occurrence like the striking of the clock. In spite of our knowing that the successive strokes are identical, the present stroke is quite different from the previous one and the next, as remembered or expected. A thing focused in the now is with me, for I am ever present. It is my own reality that I impart to the present event. That is so important. I mean, maybe some listeners aren't feeling this yet. I suppose there was a time when if I had heard this teaching, I wouldn't have been feeling it yet. So if that happens to be the case for you, that's okay. But if you are feeling this, this is so important. Because what this is saying is that my reality is what makes the moment seem real. In other words, the apparent reality of this moment is a reflection of my reality. I remember when I first started studying teachings like this. Of course, I started with the Course in Miracles. And I was, in my first 6 months of the course. And at that time, I had discovered David Hoffmeister, and I was listening to his teachings. And in my office, in the house that I lived in, I went out and I bought this big blue beanbag chair so I could sit in the beanbag chair next to my computer and be really comfortable, not in a desk chair, kind of lean back in the beanbag chair and be really comfortable while I listened to David's teachings. And I would listen, at least an hour a day to his teachings. And he would talk about the world as an illusion, the world as being not real. And you know, that was completely new concept to me. I had never heard this type of teaching before. And I remember I still have the same bookshelf in my office here in this house. So I remember I would sit in that beanbag chair and I would stare at that bookshelf. And you know, David's talking about how the world is not real, the world is an illusion. And I would look at that bookshelf and I would say, but it looks so real. You know, how can this world not be real? My experience of this world is that it is real. Nisargadatta is not denying that. Nisargadatta is not saying, no, it's not real. Nisargadatta is saying this moment does have a stamp of reality. This moment has a stamp of reality. But that is your reality you're looking at. Your reality is what makes this moment seem real. And if my eyes are on the bookshelf right now, it's my reality that makes that bookshelf appear so real. Everything that I experience in the moment appears real because I'm real. And again, this is such an important point. And like I said, we can contrast that looking back even an hour ago. What were you doing an hour ago? And I was working on loving consciousness meditation description Z, Zulu. I'm working on the very last recorded meditation. So I was doing that an hour ago, sitting here silently and recording it. And I can remember that. But that, and I was in the same chair. I haven't even moved. But that, an hour ago, remembering an hour ago when I was sitting here recording loving consciousness meditation description Z, does not now have the livingness in it that this moment does talking to you. Because I'm here. I'm real. I'm not in the past. I'm not in the memory. I can see the memory, but I'm not in the memory. I'm here. And that's why I have a cold nose. It's a little cold downstairs. That's why this cold nose feels so real. That's why. And this dirty computer, I'm noticing that it's very, very dirty. I should probably clean it. That's why this dirty computer feels so real. Because I'm real. Such an important point. So let me just read that paragraph again. That's where we'll have to stop for tonight. And I'll go back to, I have to post my loving consciousness Zulu description Z. So I'll go back to that. So here we go. The questioner asks, what gives the present that stamp of reality? And Nisargadatta says, there is nothing peculiar in the present event to make it different from the past or the future. For a moment, the past was actual, and the future will become so. What makes the present so different? Obviously, my presence. I am real, for I am always now in the present, and what is with me now shares my reality. The past is in memory, the future in imagination. There is nothing in the present event itself that makes it stand out as real. It may be some simple periodical occurrence, like the striking of the clock. In spite of our knowing that the successive strokes are identical, the present stroke is quite different from the previous one and the next, as remembered or expected. A thing focused in the now is with me. For I am ever present. I am ever present. It is my own reality that I impart to the present event. And Cheryl, I'm asking for the title. We can just call it I Am Real. That will be the title. I Am Real. All right, so I'm going to go back to my working on the meditation audio and get that posted. You all have a wonderful evening. Thanks for being with me while I spend half an hour looking at I Am That. Bye.